We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Tuesday, December 24th edition, the final free agent RotoWire NFL podcast edition. Of course, sponsored by Yahoo DFS. We've been sponsored by Yahoo all season long. I want to give them one final shout out for sticking with us in the RotoWire podcast crew. I'm Joe Bartle. You can find me at JB Fantasy Sports and join along with me for the very last time this year, but maybe not the last time for the NFL season, Jake Letarski. You can follow him at RotoJake. We are recording this on Monday, so we are making sure that we are spending some time on Christmas Eve. This will be posted on Tuesday, though, when you're listening to it. I just got done actually doing the Monday podcast with Jeff Erickson, so this has been a media trifecta run for me.
So you're all warmed up here. You had XM this morning. you did the Monday podcast with Jeff. So I'll try to catch up to your level. But yeah, it's awesome. So week 17, it's always really tough, right? We got to talk about how if your league is actually playing something meaningful week 17,
right.
You probably need to quit that league. Yeah, number one.
I was just gonna say I made fun of all those leagues that are actually playing week 17 championships, but it's possible. And there's a few out there.
Well, and then there's a few that still keep track of points throughout the entirety of the year. So that's not actually as bad as, you know, making your top prize on the line week 17. I know, like, our stake league, we have two divisions. We have an LA division and a Madison division. And the winner of each division plays each other for this really big, dumb unicorn trophy every single year. So that's what week 17 is there. There are situations, whether it's points or silly commissioners, where it might be helpful to do some pickups. So I guess today we're going to try to go through those pickups because there are a couple guys that are emerging. It's a little bit early. Monday Night Football is going to kind of affect the playoff seeding a little bit. And we don't know for sure just yet who's playing who, but we have at least a little bit of an idea and we'll float some names out there for you, crown some award winners for best pickups of the year, and maybe have some fun later on.
Yeah, normally we'd go ahead and go over them on a Monday night game in the recap. Of course, we've been doing that all season long with you guys. That obviously won't be able to take place. So anybody listening, and hopefully we'll have a Packers victory, but assuming the worst case scenario, as I normally do as a pessimistic Packers fan, if you are tuning in on Tuesday listening or hoping for us bitching about the Packers, that will not occur, unfortunately. So we'll get right into it.
We could just talk about, like, right now, like, if we watched the game and what happened. So so Aaron Rodgers came out and threw for 450 yards and four touchdowns in the Monday Night Football game. He's clearly the same Aaron Rodgers of old. Two touchdowns to Devontae Adams, just killing it. It helps me win our board bet over that.
I was going to say, why are you mentioning Aaron Rodgers going ahead and doing so well? It's because last week we actually went on this very same airway and talked about which quarterback we'd rather have more. I took, evidently was to you, the absurd opinion that I'd rather have Ryan Fitzpatrick as my fantasy championship quarterback. You said no and went with the Rodgers direction. And boy, oh boy, Aaron Rodgers needs to have 38 fantasy points against the Vikings this week in order to beat Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's crazy what some of these QB streamer options did, whether it be Ryan Tannehill or Ryan Fitzpatrick or even Andy Dalton. Yeah.
Think of all those idiots out there that started guys like Patrick Mahomes over Daniel Jones and Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, and Andy Dalton. Like, geez, what were you thinking? Obviously, Mahomes was going to have a tough matchup against the Bears compared to those guys.
Yeah, it's absolutely absurd to think that you won your fantasy championships off of Ryan Fitzpatrick. But of course, there's guys like Lamar Jackson or Christian McCaffrey that did their normal things. We're going to get to, I think, and I teased about this on the Monday podcast, a very, very early mock draft, a 2020 version of it with the first round. Jake and I will be breaking it down towards the end of this podcast, but I do want to touch on a few of these free agents to pick up because there's a bit of injuries. Of course, the Ravens are about the only team right now that have clinched anything or have nothing else to play for in Week 17. So there's enough incentive for teams. I think this will actually be one of our more interesting postseason fantasy conversations in terms of free agents to be or pickups to be.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pickups. And I know when I was outlining the show, I also tossed in a couple of like real cheap dynasty guys. I saw we had a Twitter question about that this week. And I'm in a not a dynasty league, but a keeper league where, you know, there are some guys out there that I might pick up for $0. And that could maybe have their stock grow during the offseason, depending on how the draft and free agency shakes out. Don't have a ton of those guys in there, but if they came up when I was sweeping through box scores and lists this week, they might be worth a mention.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Before we get into some of that and dive into more of the free agent pickups, I want to get a word from our sponsors, Yahoo DFS. For sports and betting fans in the New Jersey area, this is the moment you've been waiting for. Sports betting is available today at Yahoo Sports and the Yahoo Sports app, powered by BetMGM. Yahoo Sportsbook, powered by BetMGM, allows fans nationwide to view betting odds across a variety of sports, and users of legal age to bet in the state of New Jersey can click through the odds to place bets on BetMGM. New users 21 or older in New Jersey can make their first $10 deposit and receive $100 in free bets. Go to betmgm.com/yahoo to get started and for a full offer, terms, and conditions. Of course, Yahoo Daily Fantasy continues to launch new daily fantasy contests every day. Visit yahoo.com/dailyfantasy to enter NFL, NBA, or NHL contest. All right.
They've got some real slick prize pools for NBA on Christmas time. I was kind of looking ahead to that. They launched those already, and definitely a fun way to try something new and get in the action.
The Bucks play. Of course, we're based in Madison, Wisconsin, so Wisconsin NBA makes me care most about that stuff. Well,
on Christmas.
Yeah, they play on Christmas, right?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so, when you have the best player in the world, I guess you play on Christmas
time. That's right, and you're one of the best teams after defeating the Los Angeles Lakers last week. All right, enough NBA talk, Jake. This is an NFL podcast. How dare you try to distract me with my Bucks? Let's go over and touch on the quarterbacks a little bit more. Again, we kind of rehashed this. Lamar Jackson, the Ravens, about the only team that we know for certain is going to be benching people. The Texans have already come out and said they're going to be playing their starters. They really don't have a lot other than number three seed, number four seed. There's a few of those teams.
We're trying to gauge these situations the best we can. After watching Lamar Jackson take that hit against Cleveland, instead of running out of bounds, he got smoked. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see that.
Oh, man, did he take a shot? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, he got up and he was fine. But, you know, the smart thing to do, you've clinched home field advantage throughout. Why really play anybody? Mark Ingram kind of had an injury. We might discuss MRI, that a little bit. Yeah, needs an MRI. They're thinking definitely out week 17 playoffs he's going to try to come back for. We'll see on that. The only interesting angle is, like, I don't know, do the Ravens have any incentive to keep their playoff eligible rivals, the Pittsburgh Steelers, out of the playoffs? Because they'll be hosting Pittsburgh, I believe, and Pittsburgh could still get in the playoffs with a win and maybe some help. So that's interesting. But no, as of right now, I'm going to operate as if you're finding a replacement for Lamar Jackson this week?
I'd almost think the Ravens would want the Steelers to win, given how bad their offense has been. Certainly the Steelers' defense has been able to keep things ugly and keep them competitive, but now Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges, we were going back and forth. Literally mid-game we had that, and then of course Mason Rudolph gets hurt. Doesn't seem like he's going to be able to play week 17, so we're back to Duck Hodges again as the starting quarterback, and I think that makes, if you are a postseason team in the AFC, you almost want the Steelers to get in, as opposed to the Titans, who have been one of the more destructive offenses in the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Exactly, and on the NFC side, as of right now, pretty much everyone still has something to play for, even if it is just seeding. Of course, I do have to brace for the possibility that the Packers lose, which means the Saints would clinch a first round bye. I guess that is actually a possibility because the Packers are 5.5-point underdogs, according to Vegas last time I checked. So that is possible. And if that happens, then we start having to think about, okay, do the Saints play Breeze, Kamara, Michael Thomas, some of these big time fantasy assets that got you there?
Well, yeah, Michael Thomas already set the single season reception record this past week against the Titans, so maybe there's less incentive for him. I don't know record-wise what else is out there for the Saints. I'm sure there's things possible, and that's kind of one of my biggest takeaways for Week 17. If you are playing, targeting those guys that need to set career highs or season highs or whatever else might be the way to go. And let's see if we can identify a few of them. Of course, we talked about all the streaming quarterbacks this past week. If Lamar Jackson is ruled out, I wonder if RG3 in what could be like a Matt Flynn-esque kind of game. Do you remember that a couple of years ago where he threw for 400-plus yards?
I don't think that's happening against the Steelers' defense, though. The Steelers have a much more respectable defense with playoff hopes on the line. RG3, who I actually forgot to mention, I didn't even think to go straight to the Lamar Jackson backup. I just looked at the percent ownerships and kind of pulled my list from there. He would be a viable fantasy play. I think the way that their offense is run, and they still have enough talented running backs and receivers, again, depending on how much they go, if he's working with a cast of backups or if he does get some, like a half out of the starters, let's say. But RG3 would be on that list, though probably mostly for two quarterback leagues, because I think we might be able to find better one-off streamers if we have to.
Yeah, I would imagine if you're deciding between RG3 and maybe like a Case Keenum, who is expected to fill in Dwayne Haskins at a high ankle sprain during the loss to the Giants, it seems he's going to be unlikely to play next week, which is fine. He's their first-round quarterback in a season that's gone haywire almost immediately. There's no reason to put him out there. I would rather have Keenum going, well, I don't even know who they're playing against, as opposed to RG3 against the Steelers. Just like the Steelers defense overall has me more concerned than whoever the Redskins might face this next week.
I believe they got to play spoilers against, it's either the Cowboys.
This is the Eagles, one of the two, right?
Yeah, it's the Cowboys. Yeah, okay. I was going to say it's one of those two. Yeah, they have got the Cowboys this week, who have the 13th best mark in terms of fantasy points allowed to opposing quarterbacks. Some other guys I looked at, Drew Lock has the Raiders, and the Raiders do have a lot more to play for than the Broncos. But the Raiders, in the couple weeks, at least leading up to this week, had some pretty horrendous pass defense going, and we've at least seen flashes from Drew Lock. So would he be in your streaming consideration?
I think I would rather have maybe a Daniel Jones, and we've really been targeting the Yahoo like under 50% ownership rate. I don't know. He's got to be close to that, maybe like in the 35 to 45
range. He's not quite as close as you think, and maybe part of that is due to his 4-touchdown game this past week.
Well, and so, he was injured 2 weeks before. Like, this is his first return back. I don't know.
He's actually only 19% owned.
Okay, so I bet you I wouldn't, like, if you are a Lamar Jackson or Drew Brees owner, which you mentioned potentially could be a difference maker following the Packers Vikings game on Monday, I wouldn't mind picking him up against the Philly defense, especially when they have everyone save for Evan Ingram available. We saw this past week what that passing attack is capable of. And I think Daniel Jones could be a real fantasy winner in a Week 17 matchup against the Eagles. I'm all in on him if I have to pick him up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, granted, the Eagles actually have something to play for and the Giants don't. But, you could have fooled me last week with how the Giants played against Washington. He had Daniel Jones had his third 30-point fantasy game of the season, and is looking to build momentum into next year. Obviously, he's the guy moving forward. Out of all these quarterbacks we talked about, I think we could probably be in agreement that he's the top one.
Oh, yeah. I think very clearly Jones, and then I'd probably go Keenum, and I don't know what I'd decide between RG3 and Drew Lock. I doubt you have to make that call at all. So,
two quarterback leagues, man. It'll happen.
No, that's very true. I would be remiss not to say we are, of course, wearing our Ward suits. We got the tux going on right now. So, you look at your actual outfit. No, we're not actually wearing tuxes, Jake. Don't be like concerned that we are.
It took my brain a second to process the word award suits. I just saw you grab your shirt, like, you know.
We're wearing tuxes. No,
we're both in Under Armour shirts right now at the moment. Shameless plug.
Yes, that's actually what we're wearing. But if we were to play along with the top pickup of the year or awards that we're giving out, I think it has to be Ryan Tannehill, right, at the quarterback spot. Like, maybe if you were using Daniel Jones or something like that. I just don't know if there was a better top pickup at quarterback than Tannehill, who's been great for the last 8 weeks.
As a season-long QB streamer, Jones was definitely not consistent enough to warrant this pickup. He was one of the bigger fab bids at the time. But I think it definitely has to go to Ryan Tannehill with 23 or more fantasy points, like, pretty much every week of the playoffs, you know, 27 a couple times in there, even had that 32 point against the Jaguars. Tannehill was somebody that if your quarterback situation was in flux at the beginning of the year, but you still had a pretty decent team, he's one that probably carried you through the playoffs.
Gardner Minshew certainly was a candidate for the first eight or nine weeks, and then it completely tailed off along with Jacksonville, and we've kind of seen where that's gone. I don't think it's a conversation point. I think it's Tannehill all the way as your top pickup at the quarterback position. Let's go over to the running backs, though. Of course, we don't know what's going to be the result of this Packers-Vikings game as we're recording on Monday. However, we do know Dalvin Cook will be out. High ankle sprain. Alexander Mattison is questionable for Monday's game. Yeah, it's entirely possible that he's active but doesn't really do much. Again, he's a high ankle sprain. It's tough to expect things.
And might just have him on hand for an emergency so they don't have to do too many fullback carries.
Yeah, sorry, CJ Ham. You're only going to get 8 carries instead of 12. And then Derrick Henry also was kind of a surprise inactive week 16. I don't know if we know his stats yet.
Expecting him back week 17. I think the whole point of him being inactive, because I was, of course, here at the office doing inactives yesterday.
Right.
One of the main points of him being inactive is so they could save him next week for a game that was more important to win, because I believe that they are still they've got playoff aspirations in line.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they're right now they're the sixth seed, even with the loss. But they're in the driver's seat, basically, for the final spot. All they need is a win over the Texans or losses by the Steelers and Colts. And
Raiders, too, I think, need to lose as well. Like, if there is a situation where the Titans and Steelers loss, which is entirely possible, Texans are expected to play their guys. Certainly the Ravens have... Maybe you consider them with a third string, fourth string quarterback as the Steelers. It's entirely possible that the Raiders also have to have a chance to sneak into the playoffs, though. I think I saw an image earlier today from ESPN. The Raiders needed 14 things to go their way from week 16 there. Halfway through, they've gotten 7 of those things to work out. It's entirely possible they could get there. But it's going to depend on if Derrick Henry is healthy, I think, or healthy enough for the Titans offense.
I wonder what small animal Gruden sacrificed, or does he have any kids?
No idea what John Gruden's home life is. Just watching, I'm blanking on the show. Hard Knocks. Just watching Hard Knocks earlier this year. I don't want anything to do with like John Gruden, his home life at all. That's a reality show.
I care not to peek behind the curtain.
No reality show needed for the Gruden family. Okay, but here we go. Back to the running back. Sorry about that.
So all that was said to say basically that Derrick Henry probably going to be back week 17. Deion Lewis actually had a decent game in a tough matchup.
Yep.
Again, brings some of that dynamic. They got their third stringer in a little bit, but I think with the season on the line, Henry's going to be back and back to a regular workload. So we can probably scratch Deion Lewis off the list of possible playoff starters.
The biggest focus probably needs to be Mark Ingram, who almost certainly will not play week 17. He's having an MRI right now, appeared to injure his calf late in that win over the Browns in week 16. Gus Edwards and Justice Hill should be enough this week against the Steelers. I don't know if you want to start them or if you really feel a need to. If you're in the championships in week 17, you probably have better options than those guys. However, I've been impressed with Justice Hill as a prospect. He was kind of a guy that we both considered in best ball leagues or very late round drafts to go with. And they could try to get him more involved in case they need him in this postseason, but the Ravens have now potentially 3 weeks to really get right and get healthy.
Yeah, oddly enough, I would lean towards Gus Edwards being the guy, just because after Ingram left, Edwards was much more involved. We don't have snap counts quite yet from week 16 up on the website, but Edwards has been over Justice Hill pretty much for the duration of the season. They'd both see a bit of an increase, but
correct.
I think if I had to pick up, chances are, I mean, if you're making this move, both of them are out there, and if I had to pick, I would lean towards Gus Edwards.
Yeah, and we were on Adrian Peterson this past week, given what he could do. He kind of fell into the end zone to salvage his fantasy day. If he's available, I think he was under 50% owned in Yahoo leagues last week. He's probably close to that threshold again this week. Obviously, I'm going AP, even with a tougher matchup against the Cowboys. I think that's the better direction. But if you're trying to struggle to replace a Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards makes a little more sense. He's been getting more of the carries. You could also go with a Miles Gaskins, who has now finally and clearly surpassed your boy, Patrick Laird, in the Dolphins' backfield. I don't know what you're getting from the running attack from the Dolphins.
But especially against the Patriots.
I'm saying I know you're getting some offense, though, from the Dolphins, and I get it. They're playing the Patriots. There isn't real big incentive for the Dolphins to do anything. Of course, they're in position to maybe get a high draft pick. But I feel like they're onto something with Miles Gaskins now finally getting the carries out of the backfield.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's the end of the list. I'm just kind of tossing names out there in hopes of because we're going to get some surprise scratching situations, especially.
Yes.
So it's not a bad idea to stockpile these kind of wild card guys that at least you know are going to play, just to give yourself options if you do have anything on the line.
Well, 17. It benefited people who picked up Mike Boone on Tuesday or Monday. And, you know, we sat here this past week and I was like, there's no way they're going to rule out Dalvin Cook. I'm eating crow right now. Here we are. So it could make some dividends for you out there that are trying to replace Mark Ingram. That's kind of how I feel the running back position from the waiver wire perspective has been all season long, though. Like, we struggled to find the top pickup of the year at the running back. It's probably Raheem Mostert. I think you could have made a case at portions of the season for maybe even a Wayne Gallman in that 1.5-game stretch over Saquon Barkley.
Gallman didn't really do anything, though.
I mean,
Gallman is pretty much maybe slightly more useful than Ty Johnson. You know, we can throw these names out at the year, but all the big ticket pickups this year, and this won't always be the case, but all the big ticket pickups at running back were essentially busted. And unless you snag Mostert, who had the big game early in the season, then kind of leveled out for a while, and then all of a sudden became the number one back late in the year. He was probably the best running back pickup. I mean, I got a couple good weeks out of both Scarborough and Stake League, but obviously
Darius
you're not starting
Geis
him
could
now.
Have been in there too, but he was drafted everywhere, then dropped after the injury. Mm-hmm. You got maybe 3 to 4 weeks out of him, and even then it was sharing time with Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, definitely not as sexy as wide receiver in terms of what was out there on the waiver wire this year.
I feel like we could have five different wide receivers be number one overall top pickups, and running back's not even close to
that. Yeah, wherever we put the top running back, it'll be definitely outside the top five in terms of overall pickups on the season because, it was just it was carnage. And, you know, there wasn't a whole lot to exploit at that position, and just kind of shows again that you got to shore up that position as much as you can on draft day.
Yeah, and why you want to invest those higher picks in the running back spot. I mean, they've been disappointments. We talked about Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara. Both those guys finally had get-right games in Week 16, but if you made it to the Fantasy Championships, you probably weren't relying on them anyway. So let's move over to the wide receivers. We talked about it a little bit. Case Keenum, now likely to be the starting quarterback for the Redskins. Steve Sims had 2 touchdowns against the Giants, who, of course, have been bad and have been bad all season long in the secondary. Against the Cowboys, I don't know what offense they're getting from the Redskins, especially if they're going to rely on Adrian Peterson again. Like, if it's going to be 20 to 25 touches of Peterson and 20 throws from Keenum, Sims doesn't make a lot of sense. However, he kind of fits that Anthony Miller mode, who was a huge disappointment this past Sunday against the Chiefs. That's the kind of slot receiver that if you're rolling the dice on a 12 or 14 team league, he could end up being a huge playmaker for you if everything works out to his advantage.
Well, basically, let's just let's go ahead and call the term the Cole Beasley line, right?
Yeah, sure.
He's kind of that wide receiver wins above replacement type deal, you know. So I guess to make that decision, Steve Sims or Cole Beasley this week. Cole Beasley did have 100 yards against the Patriots.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to look ahead and see who the Bills play this week and really have an advantage. Like, we get it. Cole Beasley is kind of like the main
Buffalo's home against the Jets. The total on that game is only 37, though.
Interesting. So Beasley's had 6 catches, 4 catches, 1 against the Steelers, then 7 again against the Patriots. I think from a PPR perspective, I'd feel more comfortable giving a floor for Beasley, but Sims gives me that upside. If I'm entering the matchup, like, I'm going against Lamar and Chris McCaffrey, I don't know what to do. I think I would rather have Sims in there as opposed to
Beasley. Jets do have a pretty horrible pass defense, but again, you know, you throw a couple of quarters out of that, who knows how long that game's competitive.
And the Bills can't, I mean, there's nothing the Bills can play for. They're already locked in as number 5 seed. They cannot win the division. It's possible they might play it safe with Josh Allen and company and just not do anything out there. I mean, that's more than likely why the over-under is so low, because you're not getting anything from the Bills' offense, even if all their starters are out there, and I don't know if they will be.
Yeah, exactly. This is going to be, man, the seed that they end up with, man, whether it's the Texans or Chiefs, like, it's going to be a very tough matchup for them.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, that's one that we definitely forgot about when thinking about teams that don't have much to play for. That's going to make me wonder what I'm going to do with Singletary in Stake League if he sits.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they choose to operate. Cause you know, Frank Gore just needs his 15 carries for 20 yards.
Mm-hmm.
They're dying.
Frank Gore was
that.
Completely out of the mix this week. finally, it's like, okay, hey, we're doing it right. But I bet you we see a little bit of a Frank Gore return this upcoming week here.
I did want to talk about Justin Watson, the wide receiver for the Buccaneers. We mentioned him briefly last week. It was Breshad Perriman who was a huge advantage for a lot of people out there. But the Buccaneers, Jameis Winston giveth, he also taketh away, as his 5-interception game allowed the Texans to win that. There was 7.
4 or 5. There's so many.
I lost track. It was
there's so many.
He had one call back and an interference. That's what I was thinking.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
There were 7 turnovers and a blocked field goal in the first half.
Yeah, the final tally is 4 interceptions. Let's see how many fumbles he had.
I don't know if there's...
No fumbles in the game for Tampa Bay. So
it's because they couldn't help but throw it back to the Texans. And there's a game-sealing interception, too. There was also a pick 6, as usual, from Jameis Winston. All this to say... Yeah, you're relying on a lot if you're having to start Winston. However, I think the receivers, whether it be Perriman or Watson, actually make some sense. Like, I like Watson more as a safety net over a guy like Steve Sims, for example, who could both be available.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think those guys, Watson or Steve Sims, that's an interesting one. Hopefully you're not out there making that decision.
I was going to say, we can make a board bet, and I guarantee you I'll get the win.
That's the one way to guarantee that we give the right advice there. But yeah, both those guys are in play, similar outlook here. You know, I guess I'd probably lean Sims a little bit because of the ceiling, but we'll see. Because although Watson's kind of came on a little bit, I still think he's third in the pecking order behind Perriman and O.J. Howard, who had 7 targets this past game. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll I think it's fair to say the Buccaneers will continue to pass the ball. Ronald Jones has been a disappointment at times. Other times he's been great. I don't know what I'm getting from the running attack. I do know that Winston's throwing the ball. I just did the Watson-Winston thing that they did on the NFL Network. Did you see that on Twitter, that they could not stop getting Watson and Winston wrong? It goes like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Also, one way to ensure 2 Peyton Barber touchdowns is to throw Ronald Jones in your DFS lineups.
That's very true. Yeah, I've figured that out. That's like one thing I've been consistently good at, is getting Peyton Barber day is correct when I have Ronald Jones starting.
And one wide receiver I did want to mention as well, N'Keal Harry, maybe not to pick up and start week 17, but for any kind of keeper league, if you can pick him up for nothing. I'd imagine if you're in any kind of dynasty format, he's possibly out there, but he might not be if you're only allowed 2 or 3 keepers and you can get a guy for nothing at this point of the year. He's someone I can definitely see the role growing. His stock will go up, I'm guessing, during the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. That's actually a great call.
He seems like the kind of guy that they would stash and keep a secret and then try to throw him out there and make him part of the game plan in the postseason.
Did you get a chance to watch any of that Patriots game on Saturday afternoon with the Bills?
No, when I'm not at the office on a Saturday, I don't actually have the NFL Network at home.
That's fine.
It was mostly a college basketball and, well, UFC way early in the morning because of Korea. But that was mostly it today, but I caught up on Game Pass as much as I could before the show.
They used him in some creative ways, like ways you had not seen the Patriots use any wide receiver in the past couple weeks. I was really impressed with how they're getting him involved. It reminded me a lot of what the Packers should be doing with Aaron Jones as the number 2 essential receiver for the Packers, getting him in space, doing some creative things on motion. I liked what they got Harry involved.
One of them went for 18 yards. So.
Yeah, it was good. It was a lot of things out of the backfield that I was surprised to see for Harry, who was kind of pigeonholed as a big body guy, but he can do more than that.
They could just be putting that on film to throw people off for the playoffs, like the double psychic bluff or whatever. But there's some blind double bluff. I don't know. There's a word from a TV show I'm thinking of there. But no, Harry is someone that will see his stock grow, and is like, if you do an ADP or if you do a best ball league, right after the end of the regular season and another one right after the Super Bowl, I think Harry's a guy that could move up 15, 20 picks.
I want to spend some time on the top pickup wide receiver of the year, because there are many, many guys to choose from. DJ Chark probably got you to the fantasy championships, sort of disappeared. Terry McLaurin was a consistent guy all throughout the year, but not really a bigger bust boom guy like DJ Chark. And then AJ Brown and Devontae Parker, if you got to the fantasy championships, they quite clearly won you the fantasy championship. Certainly Brown didn't do much this past week, but he did have one big run and one big reception. That's really all you need. Is there one of those 4 or a different guy that you would want to target as well?
Man, I've just got a soft spot for Devontae Parker. I can't quit
your
that dude.
League,
and he finally came through this year. I mean, he had that stretch from week 4 to week 9, where he caught a touchdown pass in 4 of those 5 weeks, which is kind of what got us on the radar. And then, you know, he went a few games without a touchdown, but then blew up in week 13 with 7 for 159 and 2 touchdowns. Did get hurt the next game, but, you know, again, in the last 2 weeks, 3 touchdowns, 180-something yards. Like, I think the guy, as far as consistency, he very rarely disappeared outside of that one game due to injury, and his impact in the playoffs, I tend to weight that a little higher. Maybe that's just, you could just call it recency bias too if you wanted to, but I think Devontae Parker's the dude, and if I got to pick any one of those guys to keep for next year, I think Parker would be the dude.
Oh, well, and see, well, that's a different question entirely. I think A.J. Brown is my keeper of the group, and it's like hands down.
Yeah, I guess it depends on
what his role has been in that offense is crazy, but you do have to assume that Ryan Tannehill, what his status will be as the quarterback for the Titans coming back next year, that makes a difference. But it's clear, in my opinion, they have built their offense now around two big, burly guys, the Titans being Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. And I think Brown is going to be, we're going to look at this draft class and be like, wow, 4 or 5 years from now, this is one of the better wide receiver classes there have been. There's so many rookie receivers, and we're not even including Marquise Brown, who was a hot waiver wire pickup throughout the first 4 or 5 weeks. There's guys like...
he was purchased by yours truly at auction, though. So
okay.
I guess in my head, I didn't think of him as a pickup, but for most standard leagues, I would say, yeah, probably.
Yeah, or a guy like John Ross, before he got injured, was also available in a lot of different waiver wires as well. He actually came back. I had no idea Ross is off injured reserve until I was watching the end of that Bengals Dolphins game. Like, oh my god, John Ross is back, this is crazy.
And I think I was talking to one of our listeners on Twitter about, like, well, if you're way down because you had Lamar Jackson, I wasn't saying start John Ross, but like, you want to look for John Ross types when you're way down in the projections, guys that could just, you know, get 200 yards and 2 touchdowns due with 80% of that coming from a couple big plays. But he'll be back on the radar next year, I would think, but there'll be question marks about whether he can stay healthy. So,
and who's that quarterback too? I mean, this is the Bengals' number one overall pick, Joe Burrow. Maybe you would feel less certain about John Ross, but that's a conversation that could probably happen closer to August as opposed to December.
So are you going A.J. Brown top pickup overall, or is he just your top dynasty guy moving forward?
Part of me wants to go with DJ Chark, because you wouldn't have gotten into a position to be relevant without DJ Chark, and he was consistent for 12 weeks despite playing with two different quarterbacks in an offense that featured Leonard Fournette for most of it. But I do think Devontae Parker needs to get that award for what he's done in the past weeks. It's what have you done for me lately, fake top pick of the year award. But
and I believe he got a real life award with the contract extension as well.
Oh, sure, absolutely. He's played his way into one of the key pieces for a Dolphins team that for 7 weeks, 8 weeks, looked like they had nothing. And now they actually have, whether it be Gesicki or Parker or maybe even Miles Gaskins, they have some things to work with on offense. That's got to be a good final line for a Dolphins team that was one of the worst entering the year.
4 years, $40 million. That's a plenty fine piece for Devontae Parker.
Yeah, let's go over to the tight ends. Zach Ertz was playing with broken ribs in that pivotal, critical divisional win over the Cowboys. We don't know if he's going to tough it out this next
game.
Week.
I watched the entire way out, and the ribs injury to him, it looked, remember when Jordy Nelson got smoked going up for a catch in the playoffs?
Yeah.
It looked kind of like that. I mean, obviously,
I missed
Ertz has got a little
hit.
More, he's got a little more meat on his bones, but I saw that and I was like, oop. His ribs got to be broken.
I missed the hit, but I saw him, like, the graphics that we've had with him grimacing even before getting off the line of scrimmage, things like that. I don't know. Like, the Eagles, they need to win still to have a playoff spot, but you would imagine they should have this one wrapped up. And if that's the case, does Ertz play the entire time? Why not pivot to a guy like Dallas Goedert, who is 60% owned? But if you're in the fantasy championships week 17, you're probably able to pick him up or at least find him. And I think that's where he's going to be a top five guy for me, I think, this week in a PPR format.
I mean, he didn't really come on. He was always kind of in play as a touchdown dependent waiver wire guy in our discussions, but he didn't really come on as a top tier pickup until the playoffs had already started and a lot of people were gone, because it was when that Philadelphia wide receiving core just got decimated and continued to take hit after hit after hit. Now Goddard is someone that is absolutely in play for the fantasy playoffs, and he could sneak into the top 8, even top 5 tight end territory if they decide to hold Ertz out for any reason. I mean, Ertz tough through it on Sunday, but I mean, man, broken ribs, that's no joke.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Like, and you said top 8, I think I'm having him higher, but that's more because there just isn't anybody left. Like, war of attrition for the Eagles pass catchers. Boston Scott had to be another featured guy again. We've seen Greg Ward kind of develop as the number two receiver, and he's had some prominent plays. He had the game-winning touchdown 2 weeks ago, was 80-plus receiving yards this past week as well. Like, that's impactful stuff. But I think Goddard was really the true target for Wentz, the number one target after Ertz's injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on.
Let's talk about O.J. Howard, too. You mentioned him a little bit earlier when discussing the tight end, or for the Buccaneers overall. He did get seven targets. I don't know. Were you impressed with the yardage total that he had with those seven targets?
Nothing crazy, but I just, somewhere deep down, something in me still believes in his athleticism. And if he gets the opportunity, granted it took the whole receiving core getting crushed, right, but if he gets the opportunity and somehow then doesn't manage to screw up the opportunity after like five snaps, then he's in play. I don't know. He's a high-ceiling guy, I still think, but there is a degree of risk there.
I was surprised that Cameron Brate wasn't more involved. He had two catches, should have been a third on a critical dropped fourth down play that would have maybe set the Buccaneers up to win overall, but he dropped that one 18 yards, I think, or something around there. Like, it just, it was a bit
special.
Of a mundane performance, and I thought they'd have to utilize him. I doubt you're going to have to utilize O.J. Howard. There's always the possibility, yeah, seven targets, that's not the worst thing in the world. Tyler Higbee or Darren Waller is going to be an interesting conversation for the top pickup at tight end, because for 10 weeks, Waller was one of the best tight ends overall, regardless of the fact he was available on waiver wires. And then Higbee has come on real late. If we were giving the award to Devontae Parker for his postseason success, shouldn't the same thing apply for a guy like Tyler Higbee?
Yeah, I can see that case, and it really depends on what your criteria is, because, yeah, Higbee carried people through the playoffs, but Waller took people to the playoffs, and Waller actually finishes the number five fantasy tight end in half-point PPR scoring. It went Kelsey, Andrews, Ertz, Kittle, and then Waller, and Waller, it makes deep statements about what Higbee has been able to do, because Waller, you know, 60 more fantasy points than Higbee on the whole year, which doesn't seem like a lot on paper, but given the state of the tight end position this year, you didn't really want to mess with anything outside that top five until Higbee came along. So Higbee is a guy that I actually noticed him sitting on waiver wire in one of my leagues, because the guys in the playoffs had their tight end position set. You know, that's a pretty good example of carelessness, wanting to, you know, make your roster the best it can be in the playoffs, leaving him out there. So
was that your keeper league?
No, I don't think so. If it was the keeper league,
that'd be a good deal. You know, like, we don't know what Gerald Everett's stat is going to be for the Rams.
Pick him up for $0, and yeah, that would have been awesome. But he's in play. I still think I give the award to Waller, but this one's super tight.
I think it's Waller for me as well, because other than Hard Knocks, we had no idea that Darren Waller was going to do this, whereas Higbee's had some success in the past, and we've been able to utilize Darren Waller for week one through week 12. Like, it's a long stretch.
Don't want to discount Higbee too much for actually being on people's radar at one point.
True.
But no, you're right. That does make another point in the direction of Waller, and Waller is going to be, he'll be drafted, I don't know, fifth, sixth round next year.
Yeah, the Hunter Henry, O.J. Howard range, that was fifth or sixth round this year. Mm-hmm. You could make a case, depending on how the Raiders improve or don't improve their pass catchers, that he could even be a third or fourth round selection. But I have to imagine John Mayock, you could call him that. That's John Mayock. Is that fine? Is that like a relationship couple that we can do for them?
Yeah,
Mike Mayock and John Gruden. I think they're going to be active in trying to get pass catchers after Antonio Brown left. Hunter Renfro's injury was surprisingly impactful for the Raiders passing attack. He came back this past week and did well. I think you're right. Waller's probably a fifth or sixth round selection for next year. But again, that's an August question that we are trying to answer in December, so that's interesting.
And we'll have a few more August questions trying to answer in December early when we get to our mock. But you want to hit defenses real quick?
Yeah, let's go to the defenses. Can we at least pat ourselves on the back one more time? We had the Chiefs, Broncos, Panthers, two of the three you called. And you called successfully this past week. I was in on the Broncos. You were too, but at least I can give myself that one a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see who to target this week here with the Colts and going against Jacksonville, who have given up. I think it's fair to say Tom Coughlin finally got fired. Maybe there's a morale boost from Jacksonville, but it looks like a bad team, Jacksonville, and I just don't know what you're going to get from that defense.
Well, I mean, the Chiefs are running hot. If you put the Chiefs, I mean, I don't know.
Or Colts?
I was going to say like the Chiefs before that, because we mentioned them last week. They've got the Chargers at home this week, and you know, not the greatest of implied total for the Chargers. They don't have a lot to play for, so I could see still rolling with them. But if you do need to make a change for any reason at all, like you said, the Colts, at Jacksonville. I just don't like that they're on the road and don't really have anything to play for. So when I was sifting through, I mean, the Cowboys are only 34%, and they get Washington at home, and they do have something to play for, and they're playing against Case Keenum. So I think I would lean more towards the Cowboys this week as one of my top pickups here.
And the Packers are another one. They're under 50% owned. That's the direction I would go. But if you were planning for the Week 17 Fantasy Championships, they should have been picked up already. Like, there's no way that somebody in Week 17 doesn't already roster the Packers if you're getting there, because you knew this
47% owned in Yahoo Leagues, yeah.
You knew this Lions game was going to come down to the wire and be a seeding thing more than likely 2 or 3 weeks ago. Yep. So I have to imagine they're already owned.
I mean, road team indoors are factors going against them, but the Lions implied total is well, I guess we don't have it.
David Blau is all yet, I need to know just, for my Packers pickup. I'm the Packers pessimistic guy. Like, I never want to root for them.
Right now, I mean, it's early, but for this December 29th matchup, the Packers are 10-point road favorites in a game where the total is 41.5. So December that should tell 29th, you all you need to know.
Well, I was going to say December 29th is my birthday. So that's about the only time that the Packers ever do well is on my birthday game. So
there you go.
There you go. Lock it in. Packers defense going to do pretty well. We've been teasing it now for a little while. We're going to go to our first round mock draft. I'm excited to talk about it a little bit with you, planning for the 2020 season. Before we do that, though, I want to get one last word from our sponsors, Armchair Quarterback. Armchair Quarterback is the real-time game where you predict the next play during a live football broadcast. Do you know what the next play is going to be? Predict it and earn points, climb the leaderboard, and increase your chance to win tickets and other prizes. It's the perfect way to make watching games more exciting. We have a special league for all RotoWire subscribers, although I don't know what's going to happen for the postseason. Normally, they target the Monday night games. I imagine they'll probably go for those Saturday, Sunday games for the postseason. The full schedule and game information is available at armchairquarterback.com. Armchair Quarterback, make every game bigger. All right, Jake, are you ready to do this? Are you ready to lose to me in our first round mock draft?
Yeah, I guess we can go through this a little bit. We'll see what happens here. I did graciously agree to let you have the first pick and to take the first layup of the day.
Yeah, the biggest layup overall. I should say this is going to be full point PPR. That's what we're looking at right now, right? Or do you want to go half point? We didn't negotiate these terms.
Half point seems to be fair to split the difference, but I don't think it matters for the first pick, even if it's standard.
I don't even think it matters for the first two picks, but we'll see. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey, given his record-setting performance, will be the number one overall pick in every draft in August, barring any injury. I don't care if they have me at quarterback. Christian McCaffrey will be the number one overall pick in every 2020 draft. Starting it now, get that layup going. I do think the record-setting performance, and I do think he's going to get over 1,000 receiving yards as we close out the end of the season here, becoming one of 8 running backs, I think I read, that would get over 1,000 receiving yards.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's an LT, Sean Alexander, basically Marshall Faulk. You know, you can throw these guys out there, but he is elite this year. You're still alive, probably, if you had him. Right. The guy is matchup proof. He takes on all the snaps. Even with a crappy quarterback, he gets double digit receptions. So he is the guy. He's the stud. He's the fantasy MVP this year. And I see no reason, barring injury, he even gets to rest for the playoffs, for the real life playoffs. So I see no reason, barring any kind of injury, that he would not be the number one overall pick in just about every single format, unless you're doing a 2 QB league.
Yeah. Christian McCaffrey, number one off the board again, 12 teams. We'll be doing this is the 2020 early mock draft. Jake, I'll toss it to you. Number two overall pick in the 2020 early mock draft.
See, now you kind of had the hint from you here that you thought that maybe it was an easy call.
I'm trying to get in your head.
That you think it's an easy call. I don't think it's that easy of a call just yet. And I thought about this actually quite a bit, and that's part of the reason I wanted to take this call. Maybe if it's controversial, part of the reason I wanted to give you the layup for pick number one. But I think number two, even though he let a couple owners down in some key places this year, number two for me has to be Saquon Barkley. We need to go back.
Really?
We need to go back to the Saquon Barkley train. Granted, the Giants front office, a little bit of a mess, but they have their quarterback now. They have wide receiving weapons, assuming they'll be healthy. I think Saquon Barkley is the guy. He's the entirety of their offense, and he showed this week, once again, what he is fully capable of when healthy and he's properly in the game plan with a 40-point fantasy day. Now, there are definitely some other options that we can continue to go back and forth with here over these next couple picks, but right now, if I'm drafting for 2020, you know, dynasty stuff aside, right, whether it's regular PPR, I think Saquon Barkley is still the dude.
Oh, it's great. You made the wrong choice. That's great. All right. I can understand some of your logic. My concern, though, is why haven't they featured him more in the passing game? This past week was about the only time that Saquon Barkley has been the guy that we were drafting number one overall last year, and I just don't get it.
Give them, again, maybe not – maybe they don't deserve any optimism from me, but give them an offseason with this personnel setup, and you've got a 22-year-old kid, will be 23-year-old next year, with all the athletic ability in the world, probably the best, I'll call him the best pure athlete at the position. If he plays a 16-game season, man, with that supporting cast, with that horrible defense, maybe they'll make some improvements. We'll see.
No, they're not going to get that much better.
Yeah, the defense
there's only so much you
yeah,
can
suddenly,
fix.
The defense isn't going to get that much better. So you mix all that up, you're going to have the fantasy carnival of the New York Giants, and Saquon Barkley is going to be along for the ride, game-proof, similar to how McCaffrey was this year.
All right, so McCaffrey number one, you're wrong, but Barkley number two.
Okay, so if I'm wrong, then who's number three?
Well, this is easy, very easy. Michael Thomas, half-point or full-point PPR, needs to be the number three or number two overall picked in your draft. Since Antonio Brown, like super heyday Antonio Brown, we haven't had a receiver that's been this productive, this consistent. And you talk about Saquon Barkley being the only thing in the Giants offense. I could disagree on that. Michael Thomas very clearly is the top option and one of the only options for the Saints offense. He's already set the record for most receptions in a season. He won't do that again next year. But even if he gets like DeAndre Hopkins level numbers, 120 receptions, 1,200 plus receiving yards, that's very good enough, or very clearly good enough, to be a consistent number one or first round pick.
See, I had Michael Thomas third on my list too, so I can't trash that pick too much. I think you're right there. I wouldn't have gone as high as number two, and maybe in the back of my head something was telling me not to go number two, because here's a scenario for you. Probably not going to happen because of the Packers getting in the way, but let's say the Saints win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And Drew Brees has all these records and decides to retire.
Great.
Why not? He's in his 40s.
Sure. Yeah.
Does that change your outlook? See, I actually have Alvin Kamara on this first round board here as well.
Stop teasing.
And both of these guys change a whole lot if Brees isn't their quarterback. We don't know what happens if Brees retires and Peyton retires with him.
What happened when Brees was out?
Teddy Bridgewater was pretty solid. So
the system,
I'll give you that.
The system makes sense. And so long as you have a guy like Bridgewater, or I don't know, like Will Greer was awful, but let's go with like Kyle Allen. Kyle Allen could do 70% of what
what
Teddy
if Tannehill
Bridgewater,
went over there? They could light things
oh,
up.
Oh God, that's going to be a record setting offense. What are you talking about? Tannehill is faith. Like this.
So
is
I guess for me, it's just like the stock market, and I'm not so sure. And the uncertainty here makes me maybe a little bit uncomfortable.
You're cushioning
when I shouldn't
your answers
be.
Too much. Stop okay. it. Like I think that Michael Thomas is very clearly number three guy, and we'll get to it. I don't know where Kamara goes, but he should be a first-round candidate, too, regardless of what Brees status is going to be. Go over to four.
So number to four, again, this is maybe a conservative pick, but I think it's the correct pick, and I see the environment being a little more favorable for this next season. With the fourth overall pick in our mock, I'm going to take Ezekiel Elliott of the Dallas Cowboys. That offensive line, still good. They'll have a new coach that'll hopefully be able to utilize him a little bit better. Keep going to him on early downs and getting him involved in the passing game. Ezekiel Elliott, number four overall. I'm taking that safety.
Whereas Saquon Barkley was an incorrect number two selection, I think you're right on board with Ezekiel Elliott, number four. I'll get to it. I think it's a good comparison. Dalvin Cook would be my number five guy. But the difference between the two is Ezekiel Elliott is almost consistently and always there to play. Dalvin Cook might have the higher upside and the bigger focus, which is crazy to think about for Zeke, the bigger focus of the offense. But he is hurt, and we've seen it now consistently, Dalvin Cook, in his career. We just can't rely on him. I think Ezekiel Elliott as the number four overall pick in a half-point PPR league is crazy to think about. Like David Johnson was most people's consensus number four this year. So you think about the depth that we're having right now where Dalvin Cook or Zeke could be number four, number five. It's very clear that we've had more guys emerge as very consistent options. And while this is a down season for Zeke, I think the head coach change, which is expected and should happen, could make a big difference for what Zeke could do. And I would not be surprised at all if 2021, now we're talking really, really, really early first round mocks, is a guy that gets up to that number one or two status overall.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if we're going to go Cook number five, I'm just going to do it, man. Lamar Jackson, number six.
Oh, I was wondering if he'd sneak in the first round.
It's time. I actually had him five on my power rankings, just ahead of Cook, but that's okay because I'll take Jackson at this point. I mean, again, I am very anti-first-round quarterback, so this is a huge leap for me. I am super anti-first-round quarterback. Even Mahomes didn't live up to it, but this is different. This is different because of the Russian ceiling. You have, again, there. I presume there will be some kind of injury risk, and you're going to have to stomach that, but I don't see any more risk with Lamar Jackson than I have any of these other running backs on my board coming up. Generational talent. I'll completely ride that hype train and take him at the sixth spot.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. I very clearly remember us talking about Mahomes and saying it's a reach to take him in the second round this year. Mm-hmm. And here I am saying, yeah, Lamar Jackson should be a first-round pick in 2020 early-round drafts. I don't know if I take him six. I think there's a few other running backs that I'd go a little bit higher.
I looked at there's a group of running backs that you could take, but I don't know if it's because we're just doing a draft here in December, but I feel like he's a little bit safer given the RB bust in the first round this year.
And you're going to hear people coming out of the woodwork, and those are the same people that were shitting on Lamar Jackson when he was initially drafted. Oh, he's going to get hurt. They're, you know, RG3 all over again, stuff like that. Stop it. Stop it. This is a guy that is more elusive and fast and able to avoid those big hits, save for the Browns one this past week, than any quarterback I've ever seen. And what he gives you as a floor as a rusher in the offense with Greg Roman now calling plays, he needs to be in that conversation.
He's closer to Russell Wilson than RG3. RG3 couldn't stop taking hits. Russell Wilson is evasive enough to avoid those hits. And I put Lamar Jackson closer on the Russell Wilson spectrum.
Just imagine if they have a second receiver. Like, they have Hollywood Brown, Mark Andrews. That's great. Mm-hmm. What if they get a second guy? And it's entirely possible they do, whether it be free agency or draft, to make things even easier. Lamar Jackson took incredible steps as a passer in his second year. What can he do in
year three? Backfield, Ingram, Edwards, Justice Hill. I mean, Hill isn't going anywhere. I don't know Edwards' contract off the top of my head, but yeah, that's loaded. I think they're going to compete for the top offense and continue to be one of the historic offenses.
So that was Lamar Jackson at pick number six out of our 12-pick first-round mock draft. I think at number seven, we've already went through Christian McCaffrey. Saquon Barkley was number two. We had, was it Zeke? No. It was
Zeke was four. It went, we went C-Max, Saquon, Michael Thomas, Zeke, Delvin Cook, Lamar Jackson.
So at number seven, I want to go back to Alvin Kamara. I think it's going to be obviously a safe play. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a lot or at least his value rise a lot in the postseason here. We got it this past week now, finally a get-right game for Kamara. His influence or lack thereof in the red zone is going to be a question mark. You talk about what's going to happen if Drew Brees were to retire. We have no idea whether or not that occurs.
Who knows? They might lean more on the run game.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. And is Taysom Hill really going to be a 6-8 touchdown guy again if Drew Brees is out? I don't know. Like, it's really tough to decide that. And I think Kamara is an uber talented player. He got injured. That doesn't normally happen. We've seen from his career.
Yeah.
This is a scenario where, in at least a PPR, half point PPR, I like him.
And he's the perfect example where you talk about touchdown regression being a good thing. Exactly. You look at the type of touches and volume he takes compared to the amount of touchdowns that he scores. People have a negative connotation with the word regression a lot of times, but in this case it means he'll actually score more touchdowns. So I think that's exactly where I put it. We're on the same page there. I had Kamara over my next pick, which, you know, I hate going with Browns, but Nick Chubb, I still think
right back
falls
to where he was this past August.
Exact spot in his draft, range, and I would still make that same pick once again.
Here I like it a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more. And why is that, Jake? Do you know why?
You have a different reason than mine, but I assume Baker will get better, and I assume they'll have a different coach.
It's because Kareem Hunt is not going to be there. Kareem Hunt has played his way, I think, into a better contract as a starting running back somewhere else. That's a different conversation.
People
entirely.
forget about the DV stuff by the time he's ready to sign another contract and be
Chubb
ready to pay him.
Can be a receiver, and that was the big detriment that I have, that what Hunt would do as a receiver or running back when he came back, and why I didn't want to take Chubb in the 6-8 range in the first round. That's gone now, and Duke Johnson's gone as well. I can't imagine they're going to go ahead and invest more resources with as much as they need at the offensive line.
Especially when they've got a guy, an elite talent like Chubb on a rookie contract. He should get Ezekiel Elliott volume next year.
And if he does, he's at least going to be, he could be the McCaffrey of that year. Like, I know it's bold to say after how bad the Browns have been and how the Browns always do Brown stuff every single year. But Chubb is an otherworldly talent and could be a difference maker next year.
All the preseason media tours, when they'd ask for a really bold take, I went with Chubb. And I think that I'm not wrong. It was just a year early.
Can I dance a little bit? I have Lamar Jackson as my bold take. I'm the Lamar Jackson guy for most of my radio spots. All right. So we've won Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, Michael Thomas, Kamara, Delvin Cook, Nick Chubb, Lamar Jackson, all off the board. I think for my next pick, we're going to go back to receiver. I'm going DeAndre Hopkins, especially in a half-point PPR. I sniped him right before he looks like.
Yeah, I swear you saw my list because, you know, a couple spots out of order, but had that pick been mine, I'd have gone with DeAndre Hopkins as well. He was, you know, the consensus, like, third overall pick this year.
Yes.
If you didn't want to make the Kamara-McCaffrey decision, obviously this burned you, but if you didn't want to make that decision, you ended up taking DeAndre Hopkins and had a lot of catch-up work to do after the first couple weeks, but started to get regular DeAndre Hopkins down the road, down the stretch. I still think he's young enough. I still think he's talented enough. What we're really asking is see the number two receiver after Michael Thomas this next year, and I agree with you. I think the answer is yes.
I think it's yes, but it's going to be close, and I'm curious. This is the part. Like when I was projecting out the 12-round, first-round mock draft, after this point, I thought there was a lot of deviation, and frankly, it reminded me a lot of last year where we were deciding, okay, after the first eight or so, especially with Zeke and his suspension thing, he was kind of like the fringe eighth point. Mm-hmm. Who ends up being this year's Dalvin Cook, a late first-round pick in 2020, like the 2020 draft? Like, who could fit that criteria for you?
Yeah, for me next up, I've got Aaron Jones of the Packers.
Aaron Jones, all right, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the Russian receiving combo really does it for him. This might be touchdown regression in a bad way because he's got 17 touchdowns through 14 games. I don't know if he'll be able to keep that up exactly, but I think he'll continue to be a very productive player for the Packers. Give him a second year in the LaFleur system, who definitely is going to have to continue to focus on the run game as Aaron Rodgers gets older and just because of the kind of coach that he is. So I think his touchdowns, his volume's pretty safe. If it weren't for a viable secondary option like Jamal Williams, he could easily be up in the top five. But I think having that competition around brings him down towards the end of that first round.
Yes, we're at nine.
We're at nine. I have him at 10 actually. So I think we're at 10.
Okay.
But I could see him. That's about the ceiling where I'd take him. But I bet you he's going to go at the turn in a lot of drafts.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some helium that occurs, much like we saw with Nick Chubb in August of 2019 here, where you see them rise a little bit more. Because yeah, you're right. The touchdown volume is basically the only thing, but you could offset that by just getting the ball more. Just allow him to get 70-75% of the carries. And oh, look at that. If Aaron Jones got what we expect to be Ezekiel Elliott or Nick Chubb number or carries in 2020, he is going to be a top three back. Like he could be on that level. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. The other thing is he's had more than 20 carries just once this season.
Exactly.
You know, he had 19 against the Cowboys in that four touchdown game. So that's the thing. The volume hasn't been there, but there's the touchdowns will probably go down, but the volume still has window to increase if his 5'9" stature can endure that workload, which, you know, he's shown us no reason to suggest that he can't at this point.
With the 11th overall pick and one of my very last selection of the first round of our very early 2020 mock draft, I'll give you one more receiver, Julio Jones, especially in a half-point PPR league. If this is a dynasty format, I could see him slip out of the late first round spot. But if we're talking about just season long formats, Julio Jones has to be in that conversation. Matt Ryan continues to be inevitable. The Falcons offense continues to be inevitable. And who knows how good they're going to look when Dan Quinn is eventually gone. Like they could go to an offensive coordinator or one of those hot coaches from college. And that might make even a world of a difference for Julio Jones, who is and will be one of the best receivers of all time, I think, by the end of his career. He's already near that conversation, but give me two or three more years of what I think Julio can be, and that's going to be right near the Jerry Rice, Randy Moss territory, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. So going to the 11th pick, I think, I had a receiver that's 5 years younger ranked ahead of Julio. We'll see if I can save him for the last pick or some honorable mentions here. But I still had one running back ahead of both of those guys, and that was the 25-year-old Derrick Henry with his back-to-back seasons of double-digit touchdowns. Got a little bit more involved in the passing game, 200 yards and two receiving touchdowns. Obviously missed this game, but this guy, 6'3", 250. This guy's a bruiser. I don't see him, with super serious injuries. There's some questions about the personnel and the quarterback play around him. But after a season like this, I have a tough time letting him get past the turn.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I guess like if you're stacking teams, you think about this. Again, Dalvin Cook was what you were able to do, and you could maybe get a Devontae Adams or a Michael Thomas or Julio Jones in that turn this past August. Derrick Henry coupled with maybe a George Kittle or Derrick Henry coupled with another Devontae Adams again, that would make a pretty formidable team at that 12 spot, especially if he continues to even be 80% of what we see from this Titans offense right now.
So he falls into that tier, and I definitely don't want to spoil any of your picks, but he falls into that tier of like Leonard Fournette, Todd Gurley, and, you know, maybe Mark Ingram, Joe Mixon, those types of guys. But I think Derrick Henry is very close to the tier above that, at the very least at the top of that tier, which is why I put him there.
Henry's above that for me. Like, if I was to consider any other running back in the first round, it's Todd Gurley. And even then, I need to see what the Rams' offseason is going to be. Mm-hmm. So that's where I was going with the safer pick from Julio Jones. And then, you know, mm-hmm. you go from there. So
fair enough. So round it out?
George Kittle right becomes my first and only ever tight end selection in the back of the first round. I think what we've seen for the 49ers offense, I don't know if Emmanuel Sanders is back or not. I know that Kittle will be the guy for the 49ers, and I like him as mm-hmm. my very last pick of the early 2020
yep. draft. I did write down and/or tight end at the very bottom pick because I think that's the first 12 overall. Similar with Kelsey this year, 12 yes. overall. If you're going to go tight end, this would be an acceptable place to do it. But I alluded to that receiver 5 years younger than Julio that's higher on my board. That's Tariq Hill with a full year and the best pure passing quarterback. There was that injury that caused him to miss a couple of games this year, weeks 2 through 5. But, with all of the NFL investigation in the past, he's a 25-year-old who is by far the fastest man in the NFL. Maybe there's someone hiding there that's better than him, but at least the fastest fantasy-relevant man in the NFL. His per-game stats continue to be outstanding. We know he's got double-digit touchdown potential, and you put it over a full 16 games, he's going to get you massive big plays, especially if your league does any bonuses for big plays, those type of things. That would put him over the top. Maybe a better standard receiver than a PPR receiver due to
he's
the
even
big play.
Past that point, though, too. Like, Tyreek mm-hmm. Hill isn't just a speed demon. He's not a Will Fuller. He's gotten now where he's an everyday guy that gets 5 to 8 catches a game and can do crazy things with those.
I'm looking at the 2018 stat line in which he had 87 catches for almost 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns with 22 carries for 151 yards and a score in there. Again, it's not like he suddenly passed his prime or anything like that. It's not like Mahomes suddenly is less good. Mahomes is going to be an MVP candidate for, you know, each of the next 5-6 years. So that's not going anywhere. Tyreek's only 25 years old. Distractions in the past. He would be one of my guys to round out the round.
That would be that one's a pretty good one. And I think the only other guy that I was considering is a late first round guy. Maybe mm-hmm. this is more of a helium play as we get through the offseason, is Josh Jacobs. I wonder what the Raiders' offense is going to do, especially the guys they acquire. I really mm-hmm. do think they're getting more receivers. Darren Waller was one of our honorable mentions there.
I can see that.
Jacobs could be the 14th or 16th overall pick in a half-point PPR league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could put him in there. I'm trying to think of any other honorable mentions. Again, Gurley doesn't make my first round, but Kittle, like you said, certainly does, and Hill does. We'll see what Seattle does with the running back position. Leonard Fournette could maybe sneak into that mix. If Joe Mixon Joe Mixon could, but I don't see them getting better fast enough. Mark Ingram, but looking down this list, I'm not seeing any other names that are that clearly deserving of a first round pick. So I think we hit the guys that we got to worry about.
Yeah, Mike Evans or Chris Godwin could be in that conversation too, since I seem to be the receiver target of this, but I don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to see what happens with the Buccaneers offseason and if Jameis Winston comes back and everything else. So
yeah, we tried to not take offseason speculation too far into this because we do have two Saints in our top in our first round, and maybe it doesn't matter. But I think we hit all the names. If you're starting a best ball draft now, that's what your first round's going
to
look like.
Yeah, this was a fun exercise. I'm glad that we were able to do this and certainly to round out our very last podcast together during the NFL season. There's not a guarantee that we won't be back, though. We've talked about a few other offseason podcasts that we could do, and of course, John McKechnie and Mario Puig do a great job throughout the entire year doing NFL podcasts every once in a while.
I sit back and munch my popcorn and watch Mario and John go to town on draft content.
They're some of the best
in terms of finding draft eligible guys and putting the fantasy slant on it. Like, James does an awesome job with the prospects in baseball, because you can see top prospect lists anywhere, but he's someone that actually gives you useful fantasy info. These guys do the same thing on the football side, and it's brilliant to watch out for.
We're spoiled. I mean, we're just two talking heads here giving you your free agent pickups, but John and Mario do the dirty work each and every year. They, I think, will be back to talk a little bit of the game recaps and previews for week 17. I don't think Jeff will be able to do the Wednesday podcast. So your next RotoWire podcast, John and Mario doing a great job recapping week 17 action. That does it for us, though.
Just thanks everyone for listening all year, and want to wish up Merry Christmas to all our listeners. If you have week 17 dilemmas, happy to help you out on Twitter. Otherwise, don't be strangers, and we'll hope to see you back here in 2020.
Thanks for sticking with us, and best of luck if you are in a week 17 league. Leave it next year, but best of luck to your fantasy championships. And again, thanks everyone, happy holidays, and best of luck to you in the future.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.